You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. I'm Kara Cooper.
And I'm Jessica Rush. And today, our guest made history as not only the first BIPOC woman, but also the first mother to play the role of Jenna in Waitress on Broadway. You may also know her as Jane on The Affair. And most recently, she and her husband, Leslie Odom Jr., who you might know from a little show called Hamilton, filmed and debuted Love in the Time of Corona.
We had such a great time talking to her, and we know you're going to love our conversation. Here's our episode with Nicolette Robinson.
Nicolette, hello.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here in our little makeshift dressing room Zoom situation.
Exactly. Making the most of 2020 all the ways we can. We're going to barrel through, you guys. We're going to make it to January 1. I promise.
We can do it.
Yes, for sure. Nicolette, the first thing we always do is ask our guests about their child or their children or their daughter. So will you tell us, because, you know, we don't often get asked that, I think, as working mothers in this business, but will you tell us a little bit about Lucille?
Yeah, I will. She's, Lucille, she's our first and only child at the moment. And she's 3 years old. She'll actually be 3 and a half this month.
I love that age. It's like my favorite. I love that age.
Such magic. So many milestones and so much adorableness at the same time, and some challenges as well. But
a three-nager.
Oh, full on three-nager. Full on. It's amazing the things that come out of her mouth. But she's so brilliant. I'm sure every parent says that about their kids. And maybe it's also just the nature of this time where we're spending so much time with her, way more time than we normally would. But I mean, I'm really amazed each day at the things that come out of her mouth and the things that she is capable of understanding and communicating. She loves performance. She loves, you know, all elements of that. She loves music and dance and reading books and telling stories and all of that. She's definitely got that in her genes, I guess.
In the blood, honey.
In the blood. In the blood. Mm-hmm. Les, my husband, calls her Dr. Lucy, just basically trying to nudge the doctor.
Subconscious, just sort of like put it in there a little bit.
Yeah, you don't need to do this stuff. You're a doctor. So, you know, you'll deliver babies one day. That's the thing. And I mean, she's so intelligent. I'm sure she could do anything that she wanted to do when she's grown up, but she definitely, we'll see what she kind of leans towards, but she definitely loves, you know, the arts as well.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Like Elliot, my daughter is 6, and she wanted to be a pediatrician for the longest time when she was that age. Like, she knew all the terms and she loved, and she would say, if anyone asks, I want to be a pediatrian when I grow up. And in the last 6 months,
uh-oh,
the doctor part has gone away. And now she is like,
putting on concerts and doing her makeup and dancing. And
oh my God.
So now we have to bring her back to the other side.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Lucy's the same way. We call her Lucy or Lucille sometimes, but she's all into the dress up and the makeup and my sister last Christmas got her, kids nail polish that just, you know, peels right off and has all the princesses on them and stuff, and the Disney princesses. And so now she's, you know, the Aries and the controlling part of me that wants everything to stay clean and nice just was really nervous about this, but she got them. She got a hold of them and she keeps them in her own little box, and she pulls it out whenever she feels like it and paints her nails herself. So she'll go into her room 3 years old and just come out, you know, with messy nails. She's getting better at it, I will say.
Practice makes perfect.
Oh yeah. But I definitely
fine motor practice. Like she's it is. Doing, yeah. As for like an occupational therapy point of view, that's really good, strong fine motor skills, it's being able to paint your own nails.
That's true. And she's gotten better at it. And I've just released the fact that I'll probably find some in the carpet and, you know, all over the place. But she just loves doing it. And she's so proud of herself. She's, Mama, look. Mm. Okay. but yeah, so she just loves all that stuff. I've had to designate a rule of staying away from my vanity table with my makeup, because she'll just, I'll find it on the curtains. And yeah.
That's why eventually I literally went and got like a whole batch of just Wet n Wild makeup for Elliot. I got her own thing, because she would go in and use and get into my makeup mm-hmm. without my knowledge. And I would come in and the blush would be in pieces and things would just be, you know what I mean? It's like, no, we're not, this costs too much money. We're not doing that. Yeah. Let's go to Target. Well, it sounds like though, but I was reading that you grew up in a performing family. So it sounds like, you know, it's natural. I was the same way. Both my parents were actors. My dad was a high school theater teacher. So I think, growing up, it sounds like she's just, you know, following along with the next generation.
Yeah. I mean, it's something I loved so much about my childhood. I mean, both of my parents started as performers and actors and singers, and you know, they met in their high school theater department at Fairfax High School in LA, and then they kind of, you know, their careers took different curves and all that. But my mom was a choreographer since I was, you know, before I was born, and she also ended up teaching at my high school. She taught at my high school that I ended up going to, but she was a high school dance teacher and did all the theater, all the musicals at that high school. And so, and she also, you know, choreographed different regional theaters in LA and community theater and at the Jewish Community Center and all those things. So I used to just grow up sitting, leaning against the mirror and watching the rehearsals. And, it was one of my favorite things to do, to just come and sit. And sometimes it was a drag, 'cause you know, my mom, that was her job. I mean, she was first a mom before she was anything else. And she kind of made her way back into choreographing, but she, you know, always took us with her, and we would just have to come to the rehearsals and sit quietly in the corner and, or in the front of the room and watch the rehearsals. And I just ended up, you know, loving it so much.
Yeah. I always, Kara's heard me, or people who've listened to these episodes have heard, I've said very similar thing, that like, I have these memories of laying on a pallet in the back of a theater, like hearing them rehearse or tech a show or something. And it's so soothing. It's so comforting to me, you know? And so it was fascinating when I was reading about your upbringing. I thought, oh my gosh, it sounds like it's very similar.
Totally.
Super special, it's right?
Too, to being brought up in a family of performers or artists in any way, right? Yeah. I mean, every night we sing and dance. We have a sing and dance party every night. And we have people who have been in our house and they're like, we don't, like, not everybody does this. And it's never really crossed my mind that not everybody does that. Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of, it's who we are and it's who our kids are going to be. And it's just, and I love that about it. You know, they would never question just being able to express themselves in that way.
Absolutely. There's not fear around it. And it's just joy that's associated with it, as opposed to, you know, feeling self-conscious or anything like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I Sometimes we, you know, there's the downsides of being, you know, at least for this, it's a different level of the industry that Lucy is growing up with than I grew up with, you know, the Jewish Community Center versus the Kennedy Center or something like that, you know.
Right. Just a little different.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's definitely the downsides, you know, in normal days. I mean, this moment that we're in as a nation, as a world is so unique that, you know, I've been saying that Les and I are home more than we've ever been. And he's been home more than I think he's been for her entire childhood so far, you know, just to be here every night and to have dinner together and to put her to bed together and just to be here. It's so different. So there, you know, the downsides are that, you know, there's a lot of travel involved and a lot of, you know, just missing daily moments. But when I'm holding her at his, you know, at Leslie's concert, or we're like going to a huge event that, I don't know, there's just, when I get to bring her on the Broadway stage, when she came to visit me and the first Broadway musical she ever gets to see is, you know, the first 30 minutes of Waitress on Broadway. It's, you know, there's those things that make me really proud and grateful and, you know that it's a unique experience for her. So that's fun.
Absolutely. When she can turn on Disney Plus and, you know, right. See her dad.
Right, right.
There's some perks to it for sure.
Totally, totally.
We kind of want to talk to you. You're one of the youngest mothers we've actually spoken to on this podcast. Because typically in our industry, women wait a little bit to have a kid because they feel like they might be sacrificing part of their youth if they have a kid too early. You know, you're so focused on career. So how did that play in when you've been with Leslie for a while? Was that always part of your plan to have kids early? How did that play into your, I don't know, your vision of your career and your path to motherhood?
Yeah. I mean, it's all been step by step. It's really, I mean, and from when we started dating, that was kind of the thing that helped us, you know, get through. We've been together now for 12 years. We started dating when I was 20 years old. Les was 27. And so I think to kind of halt the fear and anxiety that comes with, you know, starting a serious relationship, and also for him starting with such a young woman, and we also just kind of fell pretty fast. And so, you know, there's always that piece in the back of your mind that's like, what am I doing? Does this mean this is going to be forever? And somebody gave, I think it was Les, gave him a piece of advice years ago saying, you know, we were talking to someone who had been in a relationship for so many years and we were still at the beginning, and they were just like, you take it day by day. You get to tomorrow and then you decide, do I still want to do this? Do I still want to, you know, instead of looking at the long run, which now it's different, but, I guess because we started so early with our relationship in my life, you know, I became an adult in this relationship, basically. I guess we were, I never really thought super long-term. I mean, before I started dating him, I was really wondering if I was ever going to get married because I couldn't stay in a relationship for longer than 2 weeks. And, you know, also, well, you were also just being in college.
Like 19. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, being a sophomore in college, you're just, you know, dating all these different people and you're just sick of somebody after 2 weeks. And then the next one and you're just like, ah. But at the same time, you're dating other people that are closer in age to you most of the time. So I think, in terms of planning and life goals and stuff, I was really more in the moment, really more just about the present. And so I think what really made it, I always knew I wanted to have kids, but and my mom had me, I think, when she was 28. I ended up having Lucy when I was 29. And I think the turning point for us where we really decided that we wanted to have kids was post-Hamilton. It was, you know, after the year, the whirlwind. Well, you know, it had been more than a year because he did The Public. And even leading up to that, there were workshops and all that. We were both doing Off-Broadway at the same time when he was at The Public. I was doing a show called Invisible Thread at Second Stage. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of sure. We just kind of knew, like, both of our shows were possibly going to go to Broadway this season. And we were so excited. I had been developing that show for years. It used to be called Witness Uganda. And then Les had been developing Hamilton. And we both were, you know, we talked about how we were in these shows that just really, for once, made our hearts just pump. It was just, it felt like the right shows for us. And then my show didn't go. My show didn't get great reviews. The audiences, you know, really, really responded to it and loved it. And it became like a fan favorite. But the reviewers tore it apart. And so my show just stopped at Second Stage. And then his show transferred to Broadway. And I kind of went through this really challenging phase where I was auditioning and, you know, not having the response I wanted. And then having to go at night to, you know, visit Les, where people were losing their minds for this show. And we were going to events where we're in rooms where nobody knows who the hell I am and just elbowing me to the side. And I'm, you know, there with him and we're so excited and we knew how special this was and also how lucky we were to be involved with this family of people. And so it was such a strange balance for me because it was one of the greatest things to happen to our family and to his career. And at the same time, I was feeling so unhappy and unseen and underappreciated. And every conversation I had that year, you know, when it transferred to Broadway was, you know, people wanted to know about Hamilton. People wanted to talk about Hamilton. So literally every single day I was having, you know, as much as I was so proud of him and loving it and sitting in the audience of the show and weeping and just, you know, crying, even just watching people watch him on the stage. But then at the same time, just wishing that we had a little bit of a balance, of a break from that stuff. And so fast forward to April of 2016, yep, 2016, and that was when Hamilton won the Pulitzer, and it was the leading up, we were leading up to Tony season, oh, we were just revving up, and my birthday's in April, and my birthday was the same day that the Pulitzer announced, and Les and I were sitting at breakfast the day before my birthday, and I just started crying. I was like, I feel like, I don't want to celebrate my birthday this year. I just don't want to do anything. I just want to stay home and, you know, not go out. And he was like, you got to do something. Got to celebrate your birthday. This is such a long story, but we're getting to it. and I said, fine. He convinced me. He was like, you wake up tomorrow and then we'll just decide. We'll just choose somewhere in town and text your friends and then we'll just do that. And I was like, I just want to talk about the weather. I just want to, like, I don't know, talk about anything normal in life. So that morning, you know, it ended up being a really nice morning. I did a reading of a new show at MCC that, like, I thought was really exciting. And so, you know, you start the day with a creative sort of push.
It's always good to be doing work on your birthday, I think.
Oh, yeah. And it hadn't, and I really hadn't been doing a lot of work at that time. So it really felt like, okay, we're starting it off. Okay. So I said to Les, you know what? Yeah. Let's just pick a place and we'll text people and you tell our friends in the show to come by when you guys finish. And then I'll just meet you there. So we texted our friends and, you know, we chose Glasshouse.
Good old Glasshouse.
So we just text our friends, meet at this time and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that night I'm at my apartment getting ready, still kind of not in the mood to do this. But I put on my clothes. A girlfriend of mine is there helping me get ready. And I put on these leather pants and she's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, I am not in the leather pants mood. No. Take them off, put on some, you know, skinny jeans and just like, it's not that kind of a night, you know? So we go to Glass House and we show up and we discover that Lynn's dad had bought out Glass House as in celebration for the Pulitzer party. But because I'm in the Hamilton family, we, you know, Glass House knows me and they're like, come on. And they, you know, so they set us up with a table. And so I'm there and the show hasn't even gotten out yet. So the cast isn't there, but there's creatives. My friends are showing up, getting drinks and on Lynn's dad's tab, by the way, which I feel incredibly uncomfortable about, but nobody's like saying anything. And I'm like, what do we do? But so as my friends start showing up, people are like, are you okay? Because suddenly this birthday night that I wanted to just literally talk about anything that had nothing to do with the business has now become about celebrating Hamilton. And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm just going to sip on this whiskey and, you know, it's going to be fine. And then one of my friends comes and he just has this way about him when he talks to me. And he was like, how are you doing? And I was like, burst into tears as like Tommy Cale's walking in the door and different people are here. And I just, you know, completely lost it and had one of like my first literal nervous breakdowns, like not nervous breakdown, what's it called? Like a panic attack. I had a panic attack. My friends brought me outside across the street and I'm just sobbing and crying. And I didn't even know fully where this was coming from, you know, but I was like, I gotta get out of here. So we, you know, they were like, okay, we're changing venues. We're going. And, you know, this is all very dramatic, especially when you don't have all the backstories of like the other things that were going on at the same time of all this. But it really was just indicative of where I was mentally in headspace. And so it was a very dramatic night. All I wanted to do was go home and cry in a ball, but my friends are so amazing and wonderful and lifted me up. And then we all ended up, you know, having a nice night. But I knew after that I needed to fly home to LA and just take a break. So went to LA, spent some time with family. My sister and I went to Disneyland. And while we were there, just seeing families with their kids was like, oh, maybe it's because I'm ready for something different right now in life. And so I think that was kind of the turning point. We realized after I had gotten back, I don't know, you'll have to edit this because this is such a long story. After I'd gotten back to New York, Les and I really recentered and reconnected and we decided, okay, how are we going to get through the rest of the season? We got Tony season now and it's going to culminate with the Tony Awards. And I think what we realized was we need to make this night not about these nights, not about business, not about the other people that we have to, you know, network with, but, you know, this is also our lives. So it's instead of just saying, let's get through this moment, let's just get to the other side of it and then we'll fix it all. We just realized, okay, this is our lives as well. So let's try and figure out how we can enjoy this together. I mean, we'd been together for so long and this was such a beautiful celebration and we had done this together the whole way. So we made it that any event that we went to, especially the Tony Awards, this needed to be our date night. And, you know, we'll enjoy it and, you know, network and do the things you need to do. But really the first and most important thing is just like for us to be able to be present with each other and enjoy it and celebrate it together, because this was a win for our family. Right. And so that shift really allowed us to just be appreciative of the moment and celebrate it together and enjoy it. And once we had kind of gotten through all that madness, you realize you're in these rooms, you're in all the rooms that you
the
have
rooms
wished.
Where it happened.
You know, I couldn't resist that.
Exactly. But you're in the rooms where it happened and the rooms that you dream of your whole life to be in and with people, you know, celebrating you that you've admired your whole life and partying with a community that now is your friend. There are your friends when you've watched them perform your whole life, you know, or you're not your whole life, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we realized we got to that place. So now we're ready for a different sort of satisfaction, a different sort of thing to satisfy the heart and to fulfill that need. So Les left Hamilton and they stopped taking birth control.
Yeah, girl. There
you have it. And here we are.
And there so, you have it.
Woo, that was a really long story. I don't know. No, oh my God.
I love it though. You brought up so many important things. First of all, people from the outside see our world as this really glamorous thing, whether it be theater or film and TV or whatever, but the pressures that exist in all those situations are so intense, yeah. You know, like you talking about getting through award season and all of that, but also being the partner of someone who's experiencing that and you are in the same industry and you're not the one who's experiencing it. There is so much validity to what you spoke about. And even like, I remember just starting out and my husband and I opened Broadway shows around the same time. We weren't married at that point, but mine closed and his stayed open for another year and a half. And I remember not really having any confidence and not feeling like I belonged in that world because I had only been there for like 2 months, you know, and even going to his theater every night. I mean, I was 23, I was young and I didn't know who I was yet. But when you were speaking about that, I just remember that feeling of being like, no one in this room cares who I am. And it's because I wasn't secure or confident yet, for sure. But what you brought up, I think a lot of our listeners will be able to relate to, in just kind of figuring out how this business can break you, but also lift you up at the same time.
Right. I mean, and not just like people who are in our business, but I'm thinking about, you know, the women and the mothers who stop working, who do stop their careers to be stay-at-home moms and the struggles that come with that, seeing your partner continue to go out in the world and have an identity other than parent, you know?
Yeah.
And so I do think there's a lot to that. And I think it's really easy, you know, a lot of people who maybe aren't in our industry, it's easy to assume or hear us speak in this way and think like, well, what do you have to complain about?
Right.
But, and it's true. Like these are really beautiful moments and nights and yes, award seasons are fantastic, but there are real life problems, issues, and emotions that come along with that. It's just on a different level, you know, and it's not to take away from those times. I love that you guys, Eric and I talk about that, about like having them be date nights because it's like free drinks, free food, you get dressed up, like let's just enjoy it for ourselves, you know, but getting to that point was a very real thing, you know, and thank you for sharing that. Cause I do think that's an insight that we don't often hear about in a very honest way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't take away, you know, how proud you are of your partner and how supportive you are and all that. But you still, there's still, especially if you're a performer, there's a deep desire to at least just be seen and heard.
Yes.
And also just to like be able to do what you love. And so it doesn't, having those feelings, I realize, doesn't take away from the positive and from you being a good partner, but you're allowed to, you know, feel those things at the same time.
We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to our conversation with Nicolette Robinson.
Yeah, so we just dove into that. And
and I just decided, you know, we'll figure out my career stuff soon. But I think my heart was just ready for being a mom, to be a mom.
Well, I think, and I get that. Kara, Kara will remember this moment in the dressing room at Jersey Boys that I had where I was like, something's got to give. I either have to book a principal and a show or I'm having a baby. Like I got to that point where I was just, you know, and I was in my mid 30s and my husband's 8 years older, similar age difference to you guys. And he was over 40 and I was like, okay, something's got to give because for myself, I'm stuck in this rut. So I either have to have a really big moment in my career, which didn't happen, or I have a baby and I had a baby. So.
There you go. There you go. No, I mean, same.
Yeah. Same. And then you had your moment. I mean, Nicolette, you have your TV stuff, but I just got goosebumps actually when I just said that because you had such a huge moment with Waitress. So you were the first BIPOC to portray Jenna. I mean, a woman of color to play Jenna in Waitress, to portray that role. You were also, which I love, you were the first mom to actually play this role. And this is backstory that we'll probably have to edit, but my husband did all the readings of Waitress in the beginning. I saw the reading before they went to ART. He was, you know, Cal and original company. And I saw that reading when Elliot was 3 months old and I sobbed in that room, hearing Sarah Bareilles put words to what I was feeling so well. And it's such a beautiful show. And that's a role that I connected with in a way, you know, that we haven't before. And I adore it. And so I would love to hear about the experience for you as a mom, like coming into that show. Well, you know, I adore Miss Jessie Mueller and, you know, but to connect particularly in that scene, after you have the baby and we were both born today. Oh my God. That wouldn't be any more true.
I remember being in the final callback for that in front of Sarah and all of the whole team. Diane was the only one who wasn't there because she was in tech. But I remember saying to them, I was like, they had me sing, you know, a bunch of the songs, almost all of them. And, I remember before they wanted me to sing Everything Changes, I was like, I said to Sarah, I don't know how you got through this song. And she was like, she jokingly said, it's because I knew that the show was about to end and then I'd get to rest. So, I just remember, you know, not ever being able to get through that song without just crying the whole time as a mom, because it really, she's just spoke so beautifully and so honestly and so perfectly and eloquently to the experience of motherhood that I just, I've been in love with that show since the beginning. I mean, I've told this story before, so I'll do a really truncated version since I just talked to you guys for at least 5 minutes straight, 10 minutes probably. But, you know, I saw the original cast, I saw your hubby, I saw all of them, and I took myself on a date night and went and sat in the front row mezzanine of the show and just cried. And this was before I had a baby. This was during Hamilton, actually. This was while Hamilton was on Broadway and I was unemployed and just took myself on a date night. Fell in love with the music. I've always been a Sarah Bareilles fan. She's just know all of her music. And I immediately got the cast album and just fell in love with it. And throughout that whole year, post Hamilton, as I was newly pregnant and starting this journey, I started listening to the cast album all the time. And I had a really, really challenging pregnancy emotionally because we thought that when Leslie left Hamilton, we'd suddenly things would calm down. We'd have time. I don't know what in us thought that, but you know, we just really didn't understand, you know, the pulse of this thing and how it was going to push skyrocket him forward, which was such a blessing.
Amazing, right?
Such a blessing.
Also, no time to breathe. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he immediately started doing concerts all over the country and then, you know, booked movies and all the things. And so he was gone for more than half of my pregnancy. He was just in and out of town. You know, for the beginning, he would be, you know, gone 5 days of the week in different states, like traveling. And then as we got a little later, that's when we decided to move back to LA because he was just gone so much and I wanted to be closer to my family. And then he booked a movie that shot in Europe. And so I went and spent about almost a month there with him when I was in my second trimester. But I couldn't do the whole time out there. And so he was really gone for more than half of my pregnancy. And I really, really, really struggled emotionally with that. And I, you know, cried so. I mean, we all cry when we're pregnant because of the hormones, but I definitely cried probably more than an average pregnant woman should. And I started listening to the cast album of Waitress daily, and I would do it to get a good cry out. I'd put on She Used to Be Mine, or I'd put on other things. I'd have it in, you know, a playlist nightly when I'd take my bath at the end of the night, as your body is just huge and aching. And I mean, most of the songs on that playlist for my bath time playlist was from Waitress, and I would just sing it all the time, sing it to Lucy in my belly. And I sang it so much that when she came out and she was a newborn, if we put the music on, she would shift as a newborn in a way that was like, she knows this music. She recognizes it, which was so crazy. But that cast album was healing for me. It was part of what got me through that time. And so cut to literally a year. Well, I should also say that when I saw the show, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the role of Jenna, and I loved Jesse in the role. But I'd never envisioned myself playing that role. It was just not an option for me. I just, you know, Jesse Mueller is playing that role. They're never going to cast a Black woman to play this character. So it was just truly out of like love and appreciation for this piece that I've, you know, there was no ulterior motives of me like playing it one day. So,
but girl, manifested that, honey.
Yeah. Ooh, if there is ever a story of manifesting. So I would sing this, you know, A Soft Place to Land and different songs to Lucy before bed all the time. Like Soft Place to Land, I'd sing to her almost every night before bed. Cut to a year later, on Lucy's first birthday, I had to fly to New York for my final callback. For Jenna.
I love that scene. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it was just such confirmation. It was such, and I truly was like, this is not real life.
You can't miss your destiny.
Yeah. And so when I booked that and you don't ever really hear this story when you come out of an audition that, like, you know, you sometimes see it on TV where like they tell the person in the room that you got the job and that's so not a thing. But Barry Weisler came out after my final callback for Waitress, and he came out and he was like, "We'd love for you to play this role." And I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And I just started crying and hugged. I was like, "Can I hug you?" And,
just like at Telsey. Just
yeah. Yeah. Right. And so I, from that moment forward, I just knew that there was nothing about this moment that I could not be like fully present and grateful and just that I just needed to enjoy every ounce of this experience. Mm-hmm. And I really, really did. It was just the most beautiful, amazing experience, both on and off the stage, and the most cathartic too, to be able to live that every night. And then the way that the fans and the community embraced me, I can cry now just talking about it and thinking about it. Best year of my life and best experience ever.
Did you feel any, did you feel pressure being a Black woman in the first, like, I mean, because now the conversation has become a very real one within our community, right? As it needs to be and should be. So when you did the role, what was that, 2 years ago now, maybe? Mm-hmm. Stuff was starting to happen, but there really wasn't a conversation within the Broadway community about, I don't want to say colorblind casting, just being open to anyone playing a role.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so did you feel once that happened, because I know it was a huge deal. It really was, you know, I mean, we love the mom aspect, but even more so is that a woman of color was playing a role that, like you said, you saw the show and never sort of even envisioned it for yourself.
Never.
So did you feel pressure to speak to that or to carry that? Did it feel heavy for you, or was it just the response was so great that it was?
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely, I felt an enormous amount of responsibility, but there was no heaviness. It was the way, because there was so much love surrounding it all and from everyone. I mean, people were just, it was scary. It was definitely like, I've never been more nervous about anything in my life than that opening night. And especially like the way that show opens, where you literally have to stand right in front behind the curtain and it rises on you. And then you just hear the audience applaud before you even open your mouth. Like I was, oh my God, wasn't sure if I was going to throw up that day or just like cry and I also wasn't sure if I was going to cry through the whole thing because I really felt so uplifted. I mean, there wasn't any heaviness because everybody was just so happy for all of us for this moment to be happening. It wasn't about me. That moment was just, it was about so much more than just me and my experience with that. Yeah. It was just a beautiful, special thing.
That's awesome. I mean, that was a beautiful company too. I mean, knowing them and knowing even the creatives and Sarah and Diane and Jesse Nelson, everyone, like that's just, it was a great company to be a part of in general. So
it really was. It really was.
Any less of the uplifting. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds incredible.
and just like to touch on the mom part too that you guys can relate to. I mean, to be able to sing that final, you know, moment every night was probably one of my favorites. I mean, Choose to Be Mine is definitely like as a performer, it's just like you're on stage by yourself. You're singing one of the best songs that has been written, I think, in my opinion, for musical theater. That is special. But then also to live that moment every night, especially after the journey and the roller coaster that you go on, and both in the show and then also in our lives as moms, we're just on roller coasters in general. And so to be able to live that, you know, it was one of my favorite parts, and I just cried through the whole thing, and I learned how to cry and sing through my, you know,
very real,
very valuable skill.
And then now here we are, right? Here we are in a shutdown. Mm-hmm. No theater, no Broadway is happening.
Speaking of roller coaster, we are on one daily.
On the daily. But you and Leslie have, I mean, you created something. You know, so many artists right now are feeling, especially I think in the beginning, well, Kara and I've spoken to it, that we were sort of paralyzed. We didn't want to create, we didn't want to do anything in the beginning.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to come out of that as we especially see that this is going to go on for a while. But you guys took what was happening in real life and executive produced and starred in Love and the Time of Corona, which apparently this is one of Kara's favorite books.
The Time of Cholera is one of my favorite books. So immediately when I saw the title, I was like, oh, a spin on my fave.
Yes. Marquez. But,
what was this like for you? Not only the inception of the idea, but putting it into action during the time of such severe restrictions and fear, even.
Yeah. Well, I have to say it wasn't our initial idea. You know, we were approached. It's really interesting how it came about because we each got offers from our team saying, okay, Freeform's doing this new show and they want their characters to be quarantining together. And they've offered to you guys, they sent a little snippet of what the show is and then an idea of what your storyline will be. And when my agents called with it, I was like, so not in the headspace for it because, you know, also George Floyd had just been murdered the days before. It was like just that last week. Yeah. And so I couldn't even really process the idea of working. And Nick Cordero was really sick still at the time. Like he was really on his decline and
it was
he's a dear friend.
Heavy time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was, very heavy. So at first I was like, this is probably going to be a no, but we read their, idea of what the storyline was. And originally they wanted me and him to play a couple that just met online dating and went on 3 dates and then decided to quarantine together. And we were like, okay, they wanted to Zoom with us. So we were like, let's take this meeting with Freeform and with the creator, Joanna Johnson. And they talked to us and they were like, we want to really focus on love in this time. We know that there's a lot of heaviness around this time, but we want to recognize the moments that there are connections and people are, finding love in different ways. And we really liked that idea because we need that right now, you know?
For sure.
But at the same time, we were like, but we can't really do this storyline and we can't at this moment make art that is not speaking authentically and importantly to this moment that we're in. So we said to them, listen, if you guys want us to do it, we would love to. We have some ideas of a different storyline we could do that feels a little more similar to ours. And, we've been together for 12 years. We have no interest right now in pretending that we're just meeting for the first time, So it just that was not where we wanted to go, creatively, especially if we're going to work together on TV for the first time together. So we got off the phone with them and we wrote up some outlines and some ideas, and a lot of them were things that we had gone through, and we also, and a lot of it was centered around how, the stuff going on in the streets, with Black Lives Matter really affected our family, and they loved it, and they were like, okay, let's do this. So that's kind of when we became executive producers, because we ended up essentially like helping them write our storyline, and it was this beautiful collaborative process where we would have a Zoom with the writer's room and the creator, and we would talk to them and we would tell them our ideas and they would kind of bounce ideas off of us. Then they'd send us a script and then we would edit. And sometimes we would, make huge changes, like literally writing the lines. And then sometimes we'd just give sort of, thematic notes. And it was such a beautiful collaboration. And so we ended up really creating something that we felt proud of in this moment. We felt like, it feels authentic. It feels, like we're not just being silent in this moment. Mm-hmm. So it ended up being, and we were so grateful that and lucky that Freeform has such beautiful, amazing resources, and it ended up looking really beautiful. It didn't just look like we were shooting something on our computer or whatever. And I guess that's kind of how it came about. And then here we are.
That's amazing. Where was, yeah. My question, where was Lucy?
Where was Lucy? Lucy was not here. She was at my mom's house. Thank God. We are very, very blessed in the sense. And part of the reason we ended up getting this house is because it's a 5-minute walk from my parents' house.
That's incredible. Yes.
Those are dreams.
Dreams. Truly dreams. And we wouldn't be able to do any of this if we didn't have that. And so, Lucy had some great sleepovers at grandma and granddaddy's house that week. Because if we had a 3-year-old at this house, it would have taken a month to film as opposed to the 3 days that we had.
Oh my gosh.
Did you film it all on your own or did you have people coming into the house and filming it?
No, we had a crew, a small crew that everybody set, they set up tents on our property. Everybody had individual tents and they had huge, like amazing cameras, two cameras that they would put in the house. And we weren't allowed to be in the same space. If they were allowed one crew member in our house at a time, and we had to be like on the opposite side of the house. And it was very, very strict protocol, but it felt safe. And it was a small crew. So, you know, we were all taking on different roles. It felt like making a student film or something. It felt like we were back in school just doing a passion project. Everybody was excited to be there. Everybody knew that there was like a slight risk at everyone being there, and we were super careful. But because there was that risk, it just needed to be something that we were excited about, that we knew was important. And I think we all mutually felt that. So it was really cool. It just felt good to, I mean, what a blessing. We did not think we would be having work for months and months and months. And so we were also incredibly grateful to be working. And yeah.
That's amazing. And it gives hope that we can continue to create.
Yeah. Yeah. And just be more creative and
use our voices. I mean, you guys, you were able to, you know, they approached you and then you were able to make it worthwhile and, you know, lend your voices to such an important cause and awareness. And
yeah, I don't think that any of us after like the accumulative mess that we've all gone through, we have to move forward changed. We have to emerge out of this time different than we were before we started. And I think that includes just being more honest and being more, you know, outspoken with the things that are important.
Absolutely.
Know?
Stand up, speak out, be the change.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I just love picturing you guys shooting in your house together. And
it was so fun.
You didn't have Lucy with you, which kind of leads us to the next question. Not that having your kids around isn't wonderful, but it's challenging during this time when you're in your home all the time with your kids, you're with your spouse all the time or your partner. And it's hard to keep things light and fresh and romantic. And you and Les are so adorable. I watched your BuzzFeed quiz. I mean, you're just so cute.
No, I know. I can't wait. I can't wait to go out for drinks to just like hang out.
I know.
Y'all are so, you're so cute. You're adorable.
But your connection is so, so clear, and the fun factor is there. Do you have any advice? We always ask our guests a question, an engagement question that we can ask our fans too. What are you guys doing to maintain the romance during this time to keep, you know, it's a heavy time. The world is heavy. Every day the news is heavy. And that can take a toll on all of us, and it can take a toll on our relationships. So what are you guys doing to keep the love alive, the spark alive? Yeah.
You know, I think we got lucky. I feel like every relationship is on that roller coaster where it's like we're going up, 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 and we're in this great place. And then, you know, occasionally we go down and it's just kind of, that's the nature of any relationship in life. And so we happened to be, I think decidedly, we decided like we want to be on this up. We want, now that we are spending this time, we either can tear each other's hair out and hate each other and probably have a divorce by the end of this time, or we can really, really make an effort to be more communicative and get to know each other in a way that we haven't in a while. And so we've really just at the start of this quarantine just committed to growing our friendship first, I think. You know, I mean, we're best friends, you know, so it's kind of weird to say that, you know, when you have your partner, you already are friends. But when you're spending this much time, we just had to be, we had a couple rules that we like made at the beginning. One of which was we have to be able to let things go easily, you know, just move on from something faster than normal. We got to let it go because we're stuck in this house together and we can't, you know, trying not to stay mad at each other over stupid stuff, you know? And the other one at the beginning of quarantine was like, if anyone felt like they needed to go on a walk, the other one has to go with the other person if they want company. It was just a way to get each other out of the house and to have, you know, different conversations than you would have in the house, just walking and enjoying nature together. And, you know, so I think we got really lucky because we were on that incline as opposed to the decline, which you sometimes don't have much control over depending on what's going on in your life. But working together was really fun, and we just, I don't know, we're just trying to have more fun together. I don't really know how to, like, what the advice is on that. I mean, the little things for me, I guess one specific thing, which may be inappropriate, I don't know, but, you know, that we are very lucky where we have one night a week where Lucy sleeps at my mom's house. And that happened to be, you know, that's Tuesday night into Wednesday.
Hallelujah.
Oh my God. It's huge. And so we definitely have an advantage that is not fair for other parents. And we know it. We try not to brag about it because it is really special.
No, you celebrate that, girl. Yeah. Celebrate every moment.
And so for me, I think, you know, as women also, we're planners and we, you know, have certain ways we want the day to go, but letting spontaneity sort of take over has been my friend in this. You know, if I shower in the morning and I'm, you know, getting myself ready and I come in lotioned, instead of coming in with my towel on and getting dressed in the bathroom, I'm just like, let me just waltz into the bedroom and say good morning to him. And let me instead of being like, no, I got to get myself ready. I got to, you know, enjoy the morning that we actually have off and have some spontaneity and some fun in like the daytime too, which has been really nice. Oh,
that's like dreams.
I know.
Eric and I are sharing a one bedroom apartment with Elliot.
Oh my God. You know what? Like, get a lock on your bedroom door. Right. Really? I mean, honestly, she'll be fine for for a little while.
Not a good movie.
Exactly. Our 4-year-old is in our bed almost every night. It's like every night he's in our bed. And it's just like,
we will make it through. We will make it through.
Oh, yeah. We will. Take it one day at a time and allow for the chaos that is this moment. And I don't know, recognize the joy when it comes.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and of course, subscribe and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.